Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So this morning we're going to talk about the living Bhagavatam. Normally we have the Bhagavatam, and there's of course two versions of the Bhagavatam, the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. So I was in two minds about what topic to pick on to talk about, but after Swavas Prabhu just made that little presentation there to Chaitragya Prabhu, I thought it would be nice to talk a bit about Prabhupada's writings and his inspirations and motivations, of course, for writing the Bhagavatam and his other literature. So how long have we got, actually? Well, this particular seminar goes for about 9 hours, but... Okay. All right. You just cut me off when you're ready. So some of you, I think, may have already heard some of this seminar before. But as Prabhupada said, repetition is the best way to remember and become absorbed. So I hope that you won't mind if some of it's a repeat for you. Others may not have heard this before. And I hope by it that we'll get more insight into Prabhupada's writing and production of the Bhagavatam, you know, and his other literature. Prabhupada was always a writer. It's not that, you know, just when he started his work in the late 1950s or early 60s, that Prabhupada, you know, became a writer at that point. As we'll see, he was actually very proficient in writing right from his early school days. So on December the 5th, 1975, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. I had just joined his party a few days before. And he got a very nice letter from Rameshwara Prabhu, who was the head of the American division of the Book Trust. So he was reporting on a new record in book distribution at that point. I think it was the Thanksgiving Day marathon that they went on. There were three temples, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Atlanta, that were involved in that. And they hit some new heights in the distribution of books. So there was 5,406 hardbound books distributed between the three temples in one day, with some individual devotees selling over 200 books each. Rameshwara's report was dramatic. "Our men are willing to do anything to please you, and all of them have dedicated their whole lives to distributing these books. Our only desire is that you may kindly bless us with greater and greater desire to distribute these books all over the world until every home has whole libraries of your books. By your divine grace's blessings, we will never stop distributing these books. We are thinking that this is the highest pleasure in all the three worlds." Prabhupada's response was equally enthusiastic. "Your report of book sales is over-encouraging. You're all becoming very, very dear to my Guru Maharaj. I started this movement by book selling. I was never a beggar for money, but I was writing books and selling. My Guru Maharaj very much liked my writing, and he used to show others in my absence, 'Just see how nicely he has written, how he is appreciated.' So he encouraged me, and my godbrothers, they also liked my writing. After I wrote that poem for the Vyasa Puja of my Guru Maharaj, they used to call me poet. Anyway, I was working, writing books and publishing BTG alone, but I could not give the thing shape, so I decided to go to the USA. And now you all nice boys and girls have helped me so much. It is all the mercy of Krishna. Thank you very much. So that kind of rapport was going on. And of course in 75, 76, 77, book distribution was really hitting new heights. There were new records being set all through the year, Christmas marathon, etc. So Prabhupada was getting more and more enthusiastic. So later on, Prabhupada was on his last world tour. He'd been through America. And then we went to London. This was on July 26. And another new publication was presented to him. Bhagavan Prabhu and Prituputra Swami arrived from France. Prabhupada saw them in the early evening, and they brought samples of the new French Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first part. So it would just come out. They were just getting into the French BBT, developing there. As soon as Prabhupada saw that, he was very, very happy. And he told them, he said, "My Guru Maharaj is very pleased." If you note the tense there, not was, but is, very pleased. As soon as the book comes out, he is very pleased. He was lamenting, "These men, they do not publish any number of books." He was talking about his disciples. "They are simply after these stones and bricks, temples." So he condemned. He was very, very sorry. "So I thought I must take a risk." And he is pleased. So Bhagavan said, "Well, so now you have books and temples." Prabhupada smiled. He said, "Yes, temple is automatic. I never stressed on temple. I was engaged in publishing Back to Godhead. Whatever I could do, I did it because I took it very seriously that he is very sorry that these things were not done." He said, "There will be fire in this Gaudiya mat, Agunjvalbe." He said, "If I can, I shall sell the marble from this temple and convert them into books." That was his ambition. He started a very nice press, and then this Tirtha Maharaj sold it. That means Prabhupada's godbrother. Jaitirtha was there. He asked in surprise, "Sold it?" Prabhupada said, "Yes. He's not representing Guru. Oh, better let us have the money for fighting in the courts." Sometimes, Jaitirtha said a little ruefully, "Sometimes I'm sorry that my name also has that word in it." Prabhupada paused a moment and then he offered him a word of comfort and encouragement. "Well, you were Jaitirtha. You were victorious. So now whatever is being done, it is being done by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's blessings. So let us work sincerely. These things will all be successful. Otherwise, it is humanly impossible. It is by his grace." So George Harrison had just visited earlier in the day, and there was a nice conversation that afternoon. George had been praising Srila Prabhupada for his book production. They'd given a couple of the new volumes of the Bhagavatam to George. So Jaitirtha was recollecting. He said George was also commenting that how one man could have written so many books. He said that he could not even read them all, what to speak about writing them. So Prabhupada quoted a Sanskrit verse, "Mukham karoti vachalam, pangam langayate gurim, yat kripa tamaham vande, Sri Gurum Dinatarinam." Yat kripa. By the mercy of the Guru, it is possible. A dumb person can become a great orator. The lame man is jumping over the mountain. So, let us cooperate and do this business. The higher authority will be pleased, and that is our success. Yasya prasadad, Bhagavat prasada. If the higher authorities are pleased, then Krishna is pleased, and that is success. So in a minute, there'll be a little bit more about who Prabhupada was referring to there as the higher authorities. He was not talking just in general, you know, or kind of nebulously. But it's actually very, very specific. But first we'll have a look at Prabhupada's early writing efforts. We were in Calcutta, January the 12th, 1976. I think Madhavisa Prabhu, you just arrived there from Sydney after the Rath Yatra. And Jayaprataka Maharaj was there. So he reported to Prabhupada that a small Bengali book called Gita Gan, which Prabhupada had written before going to the West in 1965, is now in print and selling many copies. It contains all the Gita verses in Bengali rhyme. And Prabhupada told us that he had written it in such a way that nobody could misinterpret the meaning. So he was very carefully writing it out, even though it was poetry, but very, very exact, so that no Mayavadis could screw some of the meaning out of the Gita. So Prabhupada was very pleased to hear that all the Mayapur Gurukul children are studying it and are learning to chant the verses. Smilingly, he recalled how his godbrothers used to call him Kavi, or poet, and that even at school he could write English verse. It was nice. When we arrived in Mayapur about a week later on January the 17th, Prabhupada was there for 2 months for the 76th festival. And every morning, the Gurukul boys, there's maybe about in those days 20 or 30 young Bengali boys, most of them under 8 years old, and they had a small school just on the front wall there in the rooms there. So when it was time for greeting the deities, then they would come marching down the main walkway there, the main road, towards the Lotus building. They'd all be in single file. And then just, you know, like the American Marines, when they're marching, they have some guy that calls out some mantra. And then all the rest of them, they repeat it. So they would have one boy, he would yell out at the top of his voice these verses from the Gita Gan. And then all the young boys, they would all repeat it in unison, and they would come walking down from the front gate to the Lotus building there. And Prabhupada would sometimes look over the railing and he would smile, and, you know, he would really appreciate how they were learning that. So that point there that he said that even at school he could write English verse. Later on, we were in Hyderabad in 1976 in August. Prabhupada had gone there to open the temple. We had Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja. Jayaprataka Maharaj and Gagamuni Maharajas had flown in from Calcutta for the festival. And then they were in Prabhupada's room. They were giving a report about the preaching in Mayapur. This was on the 21st of August. So especially pleasing to Prabhupada was the news of the sales of his Bengali language book, Gita Gan. The sannyasi said that everywhere they went, people were asking for it. And some devotees were selling up to 200 at a time. It was becoming so popular that when Jayaprataka had gone to Writers Building in Calcutta, that's like the government secretariat, on business about the land acquisition for Mayapur, the workers there were approaching him to buy copies of Gita Gan. Jayaprataka said that the only difficulty was that we lacked Prabhupada's books in the local languages. So at that time, there was no Indian BBT as such. There was a little bit of translation work going on, but nothing really was happening in terms of book distribution in India. And from 76 onwards, Prabhupada really started to push that. So that was a comment that Jayaprataka made, that even in the local languages in India, we don't yet have Prabhupada's books. So to rectify this, he said that he had set up a team to begin translating the English books into Bengali. It's kind of ironic. Prabhupada came from Bengal, and yet all the Bengali versions of his books are actually translated from English. So the translators were Subhag Das, Tatpur Das, and a new devotee, Kishore, who was a freelance writer and a former honors student from Calcutta University. So back to Kishore, then he got initiated at the 76th festival. He became Chirachara Gopinath. And then about 4 months later, at the beginning of June, he was then given sannyas initiation and he became Bhakti Charu Swami. So he had just joined at that time and immediately he was engaged in translation work. Jayaprataka Swami personally reads through what they have done to make sure that there are no philosophical errors. Gagamuni said that it was difficult to get Hindi or other Indian language translations done, and Prabhupada agreed. Yes, the impersonal idea is in everybody's head. God has no legs and no head. Simply he, the translator, has got a head. Prabhupada said that even the Aryan translation of the topmost yoga system done by Gaura Govinda Maharaj, which Gargamuni had brought with him, should wait for publication until somebody could check to see that it was up to standard. Prabhupada told Jayapataka to locate a work that he had done in the late 1940s in Bengali called Bhagavaner Katha. He had written it as a series of articles for the Gaudiya newspaper, which was being produced by the Devananda Gaudiya Mat. Unpretentiously, Prabhupada told us, they were so popular, means his article, that the report was that the readers of the Gaudiya were only hankering after that Bhagavaner Katha. After reading that, then they throw the newspaper away. The other articles, they were not interested. So always your writing, people were attracted by, Jayapataka Swami said appreciatively. Prabhupada said, yes, that's a fact. Even my teachers were attracted in my school days. In my matriculation class, I wrote some essay and I got out of 100, 85 marks. So the teacher came to the class. Who has written this? So I stood up and he thanked me. Yes, it is very nice. So he especially came to thank me for that essay. So that's Prabhupada's background. He was expert in writing English poetry. He was expert in writing English prose. He was even noted for it in his school days. And we've heard there that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also had noted Prabhupada's ability to write in English. Now, of course, to produce his books, English was one requirement if he was going to preach all over the world. And then the other requirement, of course, was Sanskrit, because he had to translate everything. So on June 17th in 1976, Prabhupada was in Toronto, and he was having some conversation. We were talking about different topics, social life, history, culture, education. And Prabhupada was inquiring about the progress of the Gurukul. So Jagadish was there, and he had just been made the Minister for Education, and that was given to him as his main portfolio. So he was expressing some doubts about the standard of education in the Gurukuls. And rather, Prabhupada was. And he informed Jagadish that in Los Angeles, where we'd just been a couple of weeks before, Prajumna Prabhu had complained that his six-year-old son, Aniruddha, who was in the Gurukul, could not yet write from 1 to 10. Prajumna also claimed that the Sanskrit level was poor. Prabhupada said that he had personally observed also in Dallas that the students could not chant the Sanskrit nicely, although it was simply a question of practice. He said, you see to these two things especially. English is their mother tongue, mother language. So they can become an English scholar very easily. And the Sanskrit language, no difficulty. Read and write, then they'll learn. Our education, and then he starts speaking about himself. Our education in Sanskrit was in college. Of course, I was the best student in my class in Sanskrit. I was standing first. But we're not like the so-called Sanskrit scholars. For our purpose, we can read and write. That's all. Similarly, we don't want any very learned scholars. Sanskrit grammarian to manufacture a jugglery of words and meanings. No, we don't want that. So Prabhupada was also expert in Sanskrit. He was the top of his class in his college days. So that was, he had his two main, you know, tools, Sanskrit and English, which would later lead him into his main, you know, the main work of his life. So he did a few things, 1930s, he wrote a few articles. And in fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati informed the, I think it was the Harmonist, that was his newspaper. He informed the editors that whatever this boy writes, you immediately publish it. You don't have to check it. He knows. So you just publish it. And, of course, he noted this poem that Prabhupada had written, Adore, adore ye all, the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May. So that poem, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say, he would keep it with him and he would quote it sometimes to his visitors. He was so pleased with it. So Prabhupada then he had that ambition. As he said, he noted that his spiritual master was not happy that his disciples were not producing books. They were not doing very much writing. So he took that to heart. And then we see that in mid-1940s then, Prabhupada, of course, he began, you know, one of his main publications, which was Back to Godhead. So on July 14th, 1976, Prabhupada was in New York. In those days, we had West 55th Street, and that was Prabhupada's one and only visit there. And a reporter came from Newsday magazine. His name was Kevin Lehart. So he was asking various questions. He was a very good reporter, very sharp, and very penetrating in his questions. And he asked Prabhupada, he said, "You came here 10 or 11 years ago. You were almost 70 at the time. So what had you been doing previously?" "Previously," Prabhupada said, "I was a family man. I retired in 1954. My Guru Maharaj, he asked me to take this seriously when I was 25 years old, Krishna consciousness. So at that time, I was a family man. So I thought, let me adjust my family affairs, then I shall take it. So by doing the adjustment, it took me long years. I retired at the age of 58. Then I took it up seriously." So at 25 he was asked, and at 58 then he said, "Finally I got round to doing what I'd been asked to do by my Guru Maharaj. I was making the adjustments in the meantime." So then when I was 70 years old, then I came here. "Were you a businessman?" Kevin asked. "Yes," Prabhupada said, "I was connected with some chemical industry. I was a manager in a big chemical industry. Then I started my own business. And in this way, I was a family man." Rameshwaram Bali Mardan explained that throughout Prabhupada's life, he was Krishna conscious, and that even as a householder, he was writing. So they were anxious that Kevin didn't get the idea that Prabhupada had just been a businessman, and then he gave up one business and just took up another business. So they wanted to explain, you know, he was always a Krishna devotee, and that, you know, his main thing is writing. So Prabhupada said, "Yes," he said, "this Back to Godhead, that was started in 1944 when I was still a family man." So on that last American tour, it was very interesting because we got to Washington, early July. Prabhupada was there for the July 4th celebrations. That was the bicentennial, 200 years, American independence. So the devotees had arranged for him to be in the Capitol. During that visit, he met with the founding members of the BI, the Bhaktivedanta Institute. So they were having a lot of meetings, discussions, you know, forming a scientific preaching team, Sataputta, Bhakti Swarup Damodar, who was Swarup Damodar Das Brahmachari at that time, Madhava, Rupa Nuga was involved, Rabindra Swarup was involved, and a few others. So part of the discussion was the Mayapur Planetarium, the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. So Prabhupada was telling them that we want to have this planetarium there. We shall show the fifth canto in the Mayapur temple. So in order to get more information about, you know, Vedic cosmology, then Prabhupada advised them they should read the Surya Siddhanta, which of course had been presented by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So on July the 7th then, in 1976, Swarup Damodar presented Srila Prabhupada a Xerox copy of the very first Back to Godhead, which had been published in 1944. They had discovered it in the Library of Congress. A group of four or five devotees had gone there to search out a copy of the Surya Siddhanta, another astronomical literature. Although they didn't find that book, most of Prabhupada's books were in there. And Pradyumna was looking through the index and he had discovered this original copy of the first Back to Godhead. So Prabhupada was surprised to see it. And he said that it must have been sent to the library by his Calcutta distributor, who was the biggest in Bengal. He told us that it had been printed on first-class paper by the best printer in Calcutta, Saraswati Press. And it was released on the Vyasa Puja day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So that was Prabhupada's first attempt. And fortunately, it's been preserved. It's there in the Library of Congress. So Prabhupada got two issues of Back to Godhead out in 1944. The next time he was able to publish it was 1952, and he got two more issues out. But he was struggling. It was difficult. He was having problems with his business. Various things happened in his family life. And then eventually, of course, Prabhupada retired. And he moved to Brindavan. Well, first of all, he went to Jhansi in the mid-50s. Then he went to Brindavan. And after staying in a couple of different temples here and there for a few months at a time, Prabhupada eventually got himself situated. He had a place in Delhi, and he also he had a place at the Bamsi Gopal Temple just behind Kesigat Palace. He had a roof room for a couple of years there. And then I think in 59 or 60, then he got the opportunity to get those rooms at the Radhidamodar Mandir. So anyway, of course, he took sannyas in 1959. And on October the 3rd, 1976 then, we were in Brindavan, and somebody had given me this picture of Srila Prabhupada with Keshava Maharaj and another godbrother, and it was the day that Prabhupada had taken sannyas. So I thought, oh, this is, you know, really interesting. Of course, these things were not in such wide circulation in those days. I mean, we had no official biography of Srila Prabhupada except a very brief one, which was, you know, included in, I think, maybe the Bhagavatam or other publications. But we didn't really have, like, a very extensive knowledge of Prabhupada's previous activities before he formed ISKCON. So any chance there was, you know, to kind of delve into, you know, the previous pastimes, you know, we were always very eager to take that. So I went in and I showed Srila Prabhupada the picture of him when he took sannyas. So Prabhupada was standing to the right of the photo as you look at it. There was a godbrother seated in the center and another sannyasi was standing to the left. So Prabhupada smiled when he saw it, but he said that he didn't think that it was such a good photo. He told me that he had taken sannyas from the godbrother in the center, Keshava Maharaj, who was the same age as himself. The other devotee was older, and he had taken sannyas on the same day. So it was an opportunity for me to relish Prabhupada's earlier pastimes, which I loved to do, and I took as much advantage of it as I could. I asked whether, as Harikesh Maharaj had told me, that Prabhupada had been gored by a cow the day before he took sannyas. Prabhupada laughed and he shook his head. That incident, he said, had occurred in Delhi in 1956, 3 years before. So apparently Prabhupada was in Chandni Chowk. He was going about his business. There was a calf, so he stopped to pet the calf. And then the mother was there, and she charged him and flattened him. She just knocked him flying on the ground. And on another occasion when Prabhupada had mentioned that, about that to me, he told me that when he got knocked down by the cow like that, he said the first thought that came into his head was, oh, am I being punished for leaving my family? This was 1956, so he'd only just extracted himself from his family there. And they were kind of not very happy with him. So that was the first thought that came into his head. And then he said, but then I immediately thought about the six Goswamis and how Rupa and Sanatan had left everything to go preaching. And they said, then I was all right. So Prabhupada was in an amenable mood, and he shared a few details of his struggles in the 1950s. He said he was living in Delhi as a vanaprastha, but my paper was going on, Back to Godhead. So in Delhi, I was alone. I was doing everything, editing, selling, cooking, collecting. So the whole thing was just Srila Prabhupada. On another occasion, just not long after this conversation, we were in Prabhupada's room in Brindavan, and he was suffering from very high blood pressure at that time. So having too long conversations was a problem. So there'd been some managerial discussion, and at a certain point, Prabhupada sat back. He said, all right. He put his hand on his head, and he started rubbing it. He said, now I have brain fag. He said, we've finished now. So I'd never heard that expression before. It's an old English expression, apparently. I never heard it. So I said, brain fag, Srila Prabhupada? What's brain fag? So then Prabhupada said, brain fag. And then he said, just like in the 1950s, he said, I was going out and I was selling my newspaper back to Godhead. So he said, I was walking in the streets and it was very hot. So he said, I developed brain fag. He said, and I was reeling like a drunkard. And he said, then just at that moment, a friend went past in a motor car. He saw me. So he took me in his car. He took me to his house. He gave me some medicine. He said, then I was all right. So, you know, we have our book distributors. Prabhupada, as with everything else, was the first to do everything. And he was the first book distributor also. He was, you know, so intent on it that he didn't notice that he was getting heat stroke from walking around, you know, in the heat of Delhi. And he developed brain fag. Anyway, so that's what he was doing. He was editing, he was selling, he was collecting, he was cooking, everything himself. So I had a look to see, you know, what his production of Back to Godhead was. In 1956 then, around that time when he got the incident with the cow, he produced 12 issues of Back to Godhead. So that means one a month for the whole year. So he really got into production of it. That was his first main effort after he left Jhansi. Then, due to monetary problems, he only produced 2 issues in 1958. And then again in 1960, he produced another 11 issues. Then after that, all production finished until he came to the West. Because from 60 onwards, that was when he started his work on his Bhagavatams. And so then he left off with the Back to Godhead so that he could concentrate on writing his books. So that book writing then, that started in the late 1950s. Previous to that, he'd been writing a lot of articles in Bengali. He wrote in Hindi, and he also wrote in English. And they were published in the various Gaudiya Mat publications. There were different mats that were putting out their own magazines and newspapers, and Prabhupada would write for them and make contributions. So January the 20th, 1976, we were sitting in Prabhupada's room in Mayapur. Madhavisa was there. I think Jayapataka, Bhavananda were in there in the room. So in the evening, Prabhupada was relaxing and he was telling us more about his life before he established ISKCON. He said that when he had begun publishing Back to Godhead, many people had appreciated it, including his godbrother, Bon Maharaj, and others. So one librarian friend, he had asked him, why not write books? A paper is thrown away, but a book will be kept. So he said, and then in 1958 then, he wrote his first book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Then in 1960, he began the first canto of the Bhagavatam, publishing the first part in 1962. In 63, he came out with part 2, and by the end of 64, part 3. Each printing was 1,100 copies, and the cost had been donated by a wealthy businessman. And then, of course, after that, then he came to the West. So this conversation then on October the 3rd, I had seen one of our devotees, Akshaya Prabhu. He was Prabhupada's door guard. He was traveling with us around India, and he used to sit at Prabhupada's door all day, and he would sleep just outside the door in the night time. Because at that time in India, there was a bit of agitation from the communists. They were accusing ISKCON, this is a front for the CIA. And it had actually gone up to the Indian parliament, and they were making a big stink about it. So it was all in all the newspapers. So we were a little concerned, you know, maybe the communists, if they're a bit radical, they might even try to do something, you know, to Srila Prabhupada, to interfere with him. So this boy Akshaya was kind of brought onto the party in Bombay in August, and he began traveling, and that was his duty, just to stay guard on the door. So anyway, because if you're sitting at the door all day, it's not a very exciting occupation. So I saw when we were in Vrindavan, he had gotten a copy of Prabhupada's first Bhagavatam, you know, the Indian edition. So he was reading it. So I was looking through it, and I saw that it said that it was published by the League of Devotees. So I was kind of curious, you know, what is the League of Devotees? I mean, who was involved with that? So I asked Prabhupada then, if his God brothers had been helping him in any way with his preaching work. Prabhupada said, I did not take. They wanted, but I did not like. So I asked, did you ever think at that time that you'd be able to expand? So he said, I was trying to. It was a struggle at that time. At that time, I lived with some of my God brothers, but I did not like, and I left their temple, and I was living alone. Then, in that Imlital, you know, at Sevakunch, there is my God brother's temple. So he had a temple in Delhi, at Carol Bagh. So I left Jhansi, I came to Mathura. I lived there for a few months, then I went to Delhi. So in this way, here and there. So I told him that Akshaya has been reading one of his original Indian printed Bhagavatams, the 1-1. And I was looking in the front, and it gives you a residence in Vrindavan at Radhadamodar, and your office in Delhi. Prabhupada tipped his head from side to side. It was not unpleasant. When I was living alone, doing everything, it was not unpleasant. Very nice. Alone, everything I was doing. Rather, I had not so much anxiety for management. So he said that his youngest son, Vrindavan Chandra Day, he had come to live with him, but he had not liked that. I said, no, you don't. So they had sent him, my family, to go and live with me. So he came twice or thrice. So the reason was that I asked him, no, if you want to live with me, then you have to live with me as a sannyasi brahmachari. So I said, well, and so he couldn't. And Prabhupada grinned, yes. So what was happening was, you know, Prabhupada left home, 54. He'd gone off full-time preaching. Still, the family were hoping at some point, you know, he would remain involved. Then he took sannyas. So we all know that, you know, when they heard that Prabhupada had become Bhaktivedanta Swami, they said that it was like a thunderbolt to us. They were shocked, even though he'd been away from home for, you know, 6 years by that time, practically. So what they did was, the youngest son, because, you know, it was a bit of a burden, Prabhupada's oldest son, M.M. Day, you know, he had to look after the family after Prabhupada left, and he resented it very deeply. So what they did was they sent Vrindavan Chandra, who was only about 12 or 14 years old at that time, to go and live with Prabhupada in Delhi. They were trying to relieve the burden a little bit, and they were still trying to keep the connection between him and the family. But Prabhupada took sannyas. So when Vrindavan turned up, he just told him, all right, if you want to stay with me, you live as a brahmachari. And if you can't live as a brahmachari, you go home. So two or three times he came. Prabhupada sent him back. He came again. He sent him back like this. These things were going on. So Prabhupada said, he nodded. He said, otherwise I left home in 1950. From 50 to 54, I was living in Jhansi. So I noted that his old Bhagavatam had been published by the League of Devotees, and I also had heard that he had started that league in Jhansi. So I asked him if this was so. Prabhupada said, yes, at that time there were many students. They were not my disciples, but they were coming, just like that Prabhaka. So Prabhakacharya, Prabhaka Misra, he was one of those students. And he used to come and see Prabhupada sometimes when we were in Delhi. So I nodded, yes, Prabhakaracharya. And Prabhupada said, yes, he was the head of them. So I asked Prabhupada if he was teaching Vaishnavism, and Prabhupada said, yes. I wanted to start from there. It was very nice, big house. But this K. Munshi's wife, she tactfully wanted me to go out, this governor's wife. So it was a big house, very big, but he peacefully took it. I could have fought them, but I did not like. So there was a little history about that. Prabhupada had told us previously in Hyderabad, he had got this very nice place, big property, big house. He had a big deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was doing his preaching. And he had somehow or another picked Jhansi as a likely place to, you know, start a temple. And then later on, this governor's wife, Mrs. Munshi, she saw that building, and she thought, you know, she wanted to start some kind of women's league. So she decided that was the place that she wanted. But this old sannyasi's, this old sadhu's there, so get him out. So the landlord that Prabhupada was renting from, he had a cinema business. And every year he had to renew the license. So Mrs. Munshie put pressure on the people that issued the license for the cinema that you don't give him this license to renew his cinema operation unless he relinquishes, he gets rid of the tenant that's in this building, and then I get the lease. So in this way, there's some politics. Prabhupada had some lawyer friends. They all told him, don't worry, we'll fight this. We'll keep it for you. But then Prabhupada told us, he said, you know, I'd already given that up. I just left all the business. There was, you know, legal things. And he said, I was thinking now, well, then why should I again get entangled in this? So he just accepted, it's Krishna's mercy. Let me go to Vrindavan. So that was his reason for going. So anyway, then he told us a little bit about that. So I was still curious as to what the League of Devotees actually was. So again, I asked him, was that some God brothers that you had joined up with, or was it just... So he said, no. He said, after leaving Jhansi, then I went to this God brother, Keshava Maharaj, and I lived there for a few months. Then I went to another God brother at Imlital. Then I left there. Then I used to live alone in Delhi. Then I took one house at Kesigat. Then these Radha Damodar men, they called me, oh, you can live here. We'll give you two rooms, and we don't charge you. We'll give you the place. So then I came to the Radha Damodar, and then from the Radha Damodar, I came to the USA. So again, I asked him, well, I was just wondering what exactly was the League of Devotees. So Prabhupada started grinning. Oh, the League. Well, I was trying to collect some devotees. Some of them, they were medical students, so they came and used to live with me. But still, then I lived there for 2 years, from 54 to 56. So then I had some surgical operation, and they were taking care of me. So this Prabhakar, so they were not full-time, they were students, and they were living with me, that's all. But your Bhagavatams, I said, it says that they were published by the League of Devotees. Does that mean that it was just yourself, or were there others? So Prabhupada started laughing. He said, the League of Devotees, that was my organization. Therefore, I gave it that name, League of Devotees. I alone was doing everything. Oh, so it was actually just you. I was trying to understand who that could be. So Prabhupada said, I am everything at that time. So there were some students, but there were not any active. I was doing everything. So that League of Devotees means I am everything. I wanted to organize with this Prabhakar Misra and others, but they were not interested to devote their whole time. Just like Prabhakar, he still comes. But if you ask him to do some full-time work, that he'll not do. So therefore, I did not initiate the others. He was initiated, Haridas. So that was Prabhupada's first disciple. Prabhakar Misra became Haridas, but he didn't do anything, and therefore Prabhupada decided not to initiate anybody else. So at that time, of course, Prabhupada was just a Vanaprastha. He just left home, but, you know, he had that idea. But he said they were all learned scholars in Sanskrit. So I asked him if any of them, apart from Prabhakar, were still coming to see him. You know, no, he said they're practicing as medical men. They were medical students at that time, so now they're in practice. So sometime they came. Long time ago it is past, he said. That was 55, 56, or 54. So some 20 years have passed now since then. So anyway, that's a little bit of background on Prabhupada's efforts, you know, to publish the Bhagavatam. Now, to refer back to what he had told us when he saw that French Bhagavatam in London, and he had mentioned about the superior authority and how everything was, you know, if you please the superior authorities, then Krishna is pleased. So after Bhagavan and Pritaputra had gone out of Prabhupada's room, then I was alone with Prabhupada, and I'd been looking through this French Bhagavatam, and I saw in the front that they'd put a picture of Prabhupada's room in the Radha Damodar. The kitchen. So, you know, It shows the seat on one side, then you see the little grilled window, and through that window, then of course it looked out onto the courtyard where Rupa Goswami's Samadhi and Bhajan Kutia were there. So I was very interested. At that time, the English BBT were not putting photographs into at least the Bhagavatam. It was just the paintings. So this was the first time, I think, that it, you know, one of the BBTs had included an actual photograph like that. So I pointed it out to Srila Prabhupada. And as soon as I told him, there's this picture of your room in the Radha Damodara, Prabhupada immediately, you know, he looked up, he said, oh, where is it? He was a little enthusiastic. So I found the page for him. Opportunities like this don't arise frequently. So as he inspected the brownish photo, I asked a few questions about Prabhupada's life before ISKCON. Through that window, you could see Rupa Goswami's Samadhi. And for those two rooms, they were charging you 5 rupees a month. Yes, Prabhupada said. Those rooms, they were broken. So they asked me, you can repair these, and then whatever you like, you can give. So I thought, don't need much space. And before me, there was a tenant in the other room, and he was paying 3 rupees. So I thought, 2 rooms, but I have to spend some money. So I'll give him 5 rupees. Now I'm giving them 10 rupees. So that was in 1976. Now we have to pay lakhs and lakhs just to get into the room, what to speak about, you know, occupy them anymore. Anyway, that's another story. So I told him sometimes the devotees go down there and clean out the rooms and they have kirtan. I think this is the first book that somebody's included this photo. Prabhupada said, yes, it was very calm and quiet. And people used to offer obeisances from the outside because they knew. So practically everybody knew me, and they used to come and offer obeisances. Oh, you were very well known in Vrindavan before you came to the West? Not very well known, but people knew me. Because you were writing? Yes. Or because of your ambition to come to the West? No, at that time there was no such thing, Prabhupada replied. I was living there, retired man. So when you went to Vrindavan, you'd given up the idea of coming to the West? No, coming to the West, the idea was there. But I was planning how to go, how to get there, how to preach there, how to take some books, how to bring them. So everything alone. So then as soon as you had some books, then you were ready. Yes, then I decided. So everything was being dictated by superior. So that triggered off an opportunity. When I'd first joined Prabhupada's party, and we were in Vrindavan in December of 75, Harikesh had mentioned to me that he had heard that Prabhupada, when he was in the Radha Damodara, had been personally instructed by Srila Rupa Goswami about going to the West and doing his preaching. But he didn't know any of the details. And I'd never met anybody else that knew anything about that incident, but it intrigued me, naturally. And I thought, if I ever get the chance, I'm going to ask Prabhupada about that. But, you know, you can't just go into Prabhupada's room and sit down and say, can you tell me about the time, you know. So I had to wait. So 7 months later then, we're there in London. And this was it. As soon as Prabhupada said everything was being dictated by the superior, I thought, this is my opportunity. So I said, well, I was told that one day you were told by Rupa Goswami that you must go. Prabhupada's mood changed slightly. But that was an open secret, he said dismissively. Everybody knew. And then he changed the subject. So that was all I heard. He just confirmed that it had happened. I never heard a word about that for 28 years. Not from Prabhupada and not from any of the devotees. Then in 2004, Mula Prakriti came out with this book, Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. And it was a compilation of interviews that she'd done with people that knew Prabhupada before he had come to the West. So I started reading that book. And there's this interview there with this man, Gopal Chandra Ghosh, who works at the Vrindavan Research Institute. So that institute, of course, is just two blocks down from Krishna Balaram Mandir. And they have, I mean, amazing stuff in there. It's mainly for scholars, but they've got original writings of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, etc., right on the palm leaves. I mean, there's a lot of really amazing stuff. So this man, he was about 20 years old when Prabhupada was living at the Radha Damodar. And he used to sometimes go there and he would chat with Prabhupada. So he then, in his interview, he says that there were several times that I recall him telling me about his Gurudev. Once he had a fever and he was sitting covered with a blanket and cloth reading the Bhagavatam. So I bowed my head to his feet. That's Prabhupada had said that before. Sometimes people would come and they would offer their obeisances outside. So this boy was one of those. So I asked him, "You're not feeling well?" So he said, "No, I have a cold. So this little medicinal cure, this will be helpful." The next day when I returned, he was happy, healthy, and he was writing, maybe a commentary I did not see. So I asked him, "Today you're feeling better?" So he answered very mysteriously, "Oh, yes." So I asked him again, and he said, "At night, my Prabhupada came to me in my dream. He encouraged me, saying, 'You do work like Narottam Thakur, like Srinivasacharya, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.'" So Swami Maharaj told me very joyfully, "I have received mercy from my Gurudev. He has blessed me and he has given me power. I was too much anxious for the Bhagavatam commentary." So he said, "You just write and all the six Goswamis will help you." So he also mentioned to me then that his Gurudev had come in front of him in sannyas dress 2 or 3 times when he had been sickly. So then during these months, when I would visit him in his rooms at the Radha Damodar, he occasionally told me some special things that I understood as secrets in his bhajan. Once I had come early in the morning in the winter time. He was chanting Hari Nam very deeply, and I saw tears were coming from his eyes. When I inquired several times from him to tell me anything, he said that he had received a visit last night. In the courtyard by Srila Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, he saw some very beautiful persons. One was wearing only kopin, and he was chanting on large tulsi mala around his neck. His eyes were large like lotus flowers, and he was extremely effulgent. Also coming there was another personality, dressed similarly, but older and taller, very kindly to him. And behind them was a much younger sadhu, whose beauty and sweetness were captivating. Swami Maharaj told me that they were Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatan Goswami, and their nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami. He said that they spoke to him and gave him mercy and guidance for his writing and for his future preaching. I tried to ask more from him, but this is all that he would tell me. So when Prabhupada said that it was all happening by the superior arrangement, I mean, that was very, very direct. The six Goswamis actually appeared. His Guru Maharaj appeared and gave him instructions how to write. So this is what, you know, we're distributing. This is Prabhupada's purports. And we got a little further insight, of course, into Prabhupada's writing. Later on in September of 76, again we were in Vrindavan. Actually, we just arrived there. And Harikesh Swami and I were sitting in Prabhupada's room after breakfast. We were just chatting. And Prabhupada was discussing about the Bhagavatam. So he was talking particularly on this verse from 3rd Canto, chapter 25, verse 21. Does anybody know what that verse is? Dravida must know. Yes. Titikshava Karunika Surida Savadayanam Ajata Shatrava Shanta Sarava Sadubhushana. He had us read out the translation. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all of his characteristics are sublime. Prabhupada smiled in satisfaction. "This is sadhu," he said, "not the dress." Then he had Harikesh read out the lengthy purport. Then at the end of that, Prabhupada said, "So the description of the sadhu is there. It is very nice. Where will we find this description all over the world? Complimenting Prabhupada, Hari Kesh said, well, I think there's only one person who's following that description. But Prabhupada had a different mood. He humbly appreciated the words of the Shastra. No, he said, I say about the Bhagavat's description, how perfect it is in every subject matter. And then he provided a revealing insight into the source of his own words in the purport. I've tried to explain what is there in the Bhagavat to expand it. That is not my explanation. That is Krishna's explanation. I cannot explain it now. At that moment, I could explain. That means Krishna's. I can understand that. That description is very nicely given. Although it is my writing, I know that it is not my writing. It is Krishna's writing. So we should read the Bhagavatam always. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. We should not waste our time. This was not the first time that Prabhupada said that when he writes, he is simply acting as a mouthpiece for Krishna. His words and humility today merely emphasize his role as the transparent via media between us and Krishna and gave us another glimpse into the intimacy of his relationship with the Lord. So that's Prabhupada's writing. That's his inspiration. That's where it's coming from, directly from Krishna, from the six Goswamis, from his Guru Maharaj, from the previous Acharyas. It's wonderful, really wonderful stuff. One note there that I'll add about this book. It's a nice book, the Book of Interviews. Mula Prakriti did a wonderful job there. But I will say that you have to be a little bit cautious when you read, you know, comments and recollections from people that knew Prabhupada previously. Sometimes people tend to be a little bit motivated that somebody that they knew in the past, maybe a little bit, then suddenly becomes world famous. And then all of a sudden, oh yeah, he was my best friend. I was with him when, you know, like this. So you have to be a little cautious about that. Some of these, you know, interviews have to be taken with more than a pinch of salt. But at least this particular interview with Gopal Chandra Ghosh, because Prabhupada had personally confirmed that incident, then I accept that what he says is a fact. I can give an example of another person, you know, that was interviewed for another book, the Prabhupada Lilamrita. You know, the first volume, of course, is all about Prabhupada's life before he came to the West. And the devotees had to rely on interviews that they did with people that they were tracking down in India to, build up that volume to, illustrate Prabhupada's life, the details of it. So in the Lilamrita, in the very last paragraph of the first volume, it ends with Prabhupada getting on the Jaladuta. That's the very last description that's there. So in the original publication of the Lilamrita, it ends with this interview with this man, Shishya Bhattacharya. And he describes how he had gone with Prabhupada in a taxi to the Calcutta docks. So he says he was alone, a lone fighter. When he left, there was no one on the shore to bid him goodbye. No friends, no supporter, no disciple, nobody. Even if you call me, I was not a disciple of his. I was a disciple of somebody else. So I was not his follower. But due to shared love, I had very much respect for him. So I was the only person standing on the shore to say him goodbye. Nobody was with me. I could not know that it was such an important thing. Very romantic, you know, we all got this, you know, very poetic description there. The lone fighter sets off. Nobody recognized him. Nobody knew what was going to happen. Nobody was there even to see him off. All bogus. In 1992 or 93, the archives published Srila Prabhupada's own personal diary. Prabhupada was keeping a diary. Through the period before he left India, on the Jaladutta, and even for a few months later up until he started ISKCON in New York in 1966. So that diary had disappeared when the Lilamrita was written. So Satsarupa Maharaj, of course, had to just rely on the information that he got from these interviews. And later on, Bali Mardan came forward in the late 1980s. He had Prabhupada's diary. So in 67 or whatever, when he joined, somehow or another, Prabhupada had given him that diary for safekeeping. And he just kept it. Then, of course, he left the movement around 78 or something. So he had it with him, and he never told anybody. And we started the archives in 1978, right at the very beginning. You know, the appeal was out there to get different kinds of literatures, anything, any information, anything connected with Prabhupada. Somehow or another, the news didn't get out to Bali Mardan until, you know, the late 80s. He gave it in, and they published it. So when I got I first got a copy of that, that was the first thing I wanted to know. What happened when Prabhupada left India? You know, I wanted to see what he'd written about that. So this is Prabhupada's entry. August the 12th, Thursday, to start for the USA by the MV Jaladutta from Calcutta Port, King George's Dockyard. Then the next day, August the 13th, Friday. The Prabhupada left India to start his mission on Friday the 13th. Today at 9 a.m., embarked on the MV Jaladutta. Came with me, Bhagavati, the Darwin of Sindhya Sansia, Mr. Sen Gupta, Mr. Ali, and Brindaban. Brindaban is Brindaban Chandra, Prabhupada's son. Five people. The cap, and no Shishya Bhattacharya. Right? The only guy on the dock, but he's not even mentioned there, right? The cabinet is quite comfortable. It is the owner's residence, and therefore, the sitting room, the bedroom, and the bath and the privy are all equipped with first-class materials. Everything is nice in the first-class compartment, and thanks to Lord Sri Krishna for his enlightening Srimati Samati Murariji for all of these arrangements. I am quite comfortable. So that last paragraph you'll see now in the new editions of the Lilamrita has been knocked out. Because as soon as I read this, I wrote to Satsarupa Maharaj and I said, hey, have you seen this? So you have to be a little careful. You know, when people tell you things about Prabhupada's past, if you can't verify it, then, you know, maybe. But be very, very careful. Anyway, at least with this incident then with Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami appearing to him, that's a fact. We know that because, you know, Prabhupada confirmed it. So, what time have we got? Finish? All right, so, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Once again, we'd like to thank Harisuri, and for those who are Harisuri files, he'll be returning right after breakfast prasadam, which is going to be served now, to give a presentation on the Bhaktivedanta archives. And it's a very nice presentation. And then after that, we're going to begin the first session of our Srila Prabhupada pastimes. It'll go from 11:30 to 1:30, and there are many interesting people who will be giving stories about Srila Prabhupada at that time. And then there'll be lunch prasadam and Rath Yatra this afternoon and tonight's play. The highlight of the festivities tonight is going to be the play enacted right on the steps of the temple here. So please refer to the schedule of events at the back, and everybody can come back here right after breakfast prasadam for the presentation on the Bhaktivedanta archives by Harisuri. Hare Krishna.